So yesterday we were talking about, and here's the chart that made, and here's more copies thereof, to understand this whole business about the 70 years and the different possibilities about when it was going to be calculated from. We talked yesterday that we had as follows. We had Belshazzar was the first one to make a calculation about it. That Yirmiyahu had said a few different nevuos. The Gemara is going to comment today on the fact that some of them seem to be contradictory. But one of them was that after 70 years of Bavel, Hashem said, I'll remember the Jewish people. So Belshazzar calculated based on that. He figured 70 years had passed since the kingdom of Bavel was established. No sign of the Gula. No sign of the Gula. So he made his party. The upshot was that we said two things. First of all, there were some partial years involved, which okay, maybe Belshazzar realized that, maybe not. I mean, it was his own dynasty. He may well have known about the partial years, but his mistake was that he didn't realize that the Nevuah is not meant to begin from when the Babylonian Empire was established, but rather from 1 year later when he conquered Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, it was only 69 years. So therefore, we said what ended up happening is that Dariush, the first king of the king of Magad, who took over at that point, made up that last year. So he took up that 70th year. When Dariush died, it's now 70 years since Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael. Koresh becomes the new king. Koresh announces that the Jews can go back to Eretz Yisrael. The local Goyim, the Kuslim or whatever, don't like this whole idea that the Jews are going to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash and so forth. They harass them, they master on them to Kurdish and afterwards to Achashverosh, and the work gets stopped. This lasts for 18 years. During those 18 years, Achashverosh comes along, and Bishnat Shalosh Lamocha, we said in the third year of the kingdom, he calculates, he says, you know what, obviously Belshazzar made a mistake. You weren't supposed to calculate from when the Babylonian Empire was established, and evidently not either from when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, because the fact is, yes, Koresh gave the permission, but now it was rescinded. Obviously, he said, we have to start counting the 70 years from the first Golos of the Jewish people. What was the first Golos? Golos Yechaniah. In the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar, 70 years after he conquered Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in other words, he says, it has to be 8 years after Belshazzar's party. So he calculated, therefore, so 8 years after Belshazzar, the Gemara initially assumed comes Achashverosh's third year. In the end, we said not necessarily because there were partial years involved. So that was part of Achashverosh's mistake. He made two mistakes. First of all, you don't count from Golos Yechaniah, as the Gemara is going to end up saying, you count from when the Beis Hamikdash was actually destroyed. And number two, even if he was supposed to count from Golos Yechaniah, he's counting partial years as if there were four ones. Be that as it may, so his party ended in a fiasco, and Vashti was killed. What happened? 11 more years passed after that party, and Achashverosh died after ruling for 14 years. According to Achashverosh's way of thinking, it's already 70 years since the Churban, because he thought it's 70 years since Golos Yechaniah. 11 years have passed. 11 years after Golos Yechaniah is the Churban, so 11 years after that should be the end of the 70 years, but it wasn't again because Achashverosh forgot to account for the partial years. Once you account for the partial years, you come out of it, 68, 68 and a half, whatever years, from the Churban by the time Achashverosh died. What makes up that last year and a half, 2 years? Dariush, his son. In Dariush's second year is when he gave permission for the building to resume, and that's when they restarted on building the Beis Hamikdash, and this time they actually got it finished after 4 years.
So can you say that there was actually different things?
Yes, that's the thing. What we're saying is, in other words, effectively, the Nevuah was able to be understood in more than one way. On one level, there was 70. On one level, the kingdom of Babel itself lasted for 70 years, from when Nebuchadnezzar came to the throne. On another level, 70 years passed from when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael until there was the first glimmer of Geula, when Koresh announced that the Jews can come back to Eretz Yisrael. And on a third level, there's the real 70 years, so to speak, are from the Churban until the second Dariush gave permission to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash.
Why do we prefer the from the Churban to the rebuild?
Because the pasuk says L'Churban to Yerushalayim. The pasuk says we'll talk about that now. The Gemara is going to talk about that. We'll get to that. But I'm afraid to say an interesting thing on this. We see many times you have things like that. You have nevuah where a certain number of years is given or a certain statement is given or whatever, but it can happen in different ways depending on whether the Jewish people live up to it. Another example that's talked about, we talk every year, they talk about it, Pesach time in the Haggadah, Hashem had told Abraham Avinu 400 years, the Jews are going to be in Mitzrayim, and it could have ended up happening 400 years literally, but the Eibishter recalculated it and allowed it 400 years instead, reinterpreted it, so to speak, that the 400 years go back to when Yitzchak was born. So in the same way over here, the 70 years, there's a stated 70 years, but it could have packed been from the there could have packed been different beginnings and ends of it depending on what the Jewish people have been doing. One thing, some of the Farshim point out, actually, since we're saying that the whole story of Purim happened during those 18 years, first of all, as the Gemara is going to say soon, as we learned yesterday and as we're going to learn soon, that's one reason why Hashverosh made his party. But also what ended up happening is when the Jews went on Mesiras Nefesh during that time of Purim, that whole year they stood in a snow of Mesiras Nefesh, that itself helped to bring about the Taka. Now the 70 years will Taka end and the Beis Mikdash will be rebuilt, which happened Taka very shortly after that.
Does that apply to other timing?
Very much so. For example, Daniel talks about, and in various places in Sefer Daniel, he talks about, you know, the whole second half of Daniel is about, the four kingdoms and the Mashiach and so forth. In a couple of places in his Sefer, he gives figures. He gives actual numbers of years. But when do those years begin and end? We don't know. When Mashiach actually comes, we'll understand what it meant. But that's why you have all the different, even the Gemara talks about kitzim, but the various Rishonim and Achronim brought different kitzim in different times because the different ways of explaining when these 1290 or whatever it is years that Daniel mentions, when do they begin, when do they end? So a lot of it is, Elul Zachut, if the Jewish people are observed, for example, when you count them from an earlier point in history like this, they have to be counted from a later point. So actually, with Achashverosh, so first of all, again, remember Achashverosh figured Belshazzar had made a mistake. He calculated from the wrong time. I'm going to calculate from the correct time. But second of all, we're going to have later, as we get down to the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, we're going to talk about how Achashverosh, and Mephoshim explained how in various ways Achashverosh was careful in certain ways not to repeat Belshazzar's mistakes. Okay, so very nice, the greatness of Hashem. Okay, but after all, 70 years is 70 years and nothing happened. Apparently, yeah. But that's the thing, that's why I'm saying that some of the Farshim explained that Achashverosh was careful to use the Kalim in a way that wouldn't be quite so degrading. Not like Belshazzar did, for example, yeah.
They keep trying to...
Oh, there's that too, yeah. I'm sure I'd never learn, yeah. Okay, so we're holding on the second line of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Amar Rava, after Daniel tov b'hai chushbana. Also, Daniel made a mistake as far as this cheshbon. Not the mistake like we're talking about, like Achashverosh, as far as counting partial years as if they were full ones, but he made a similar mistake as far as when you calculate the 70 years, when do they begin and when do they end. He made sort of the same mistake as Belshazzar. Dichtiv, v'shnas achas l'molchoi, in the first year of Dariavish's reign, ani Daniel b'noisi b'sfarim. I, Daniel, checked into, I was thinking about the sfarim, about the what it says in Yirmiyah, about the 70 years, and he goes on to describe, I'm seeing in the first year of Dariavish, there's no sign of Geula yet, Ha'itochen, 70 years have already passed, and he's all upset about it. He davens a whole long fila. Some of the psukim that we say on Monday and Thursday in Vehurachum, Va'asa Hashem Elokeinu Asher Etzei Tzamcha, Hatei Elokei Oznecha, all comes from this tefillah of Daniel's, until a malach comes and tells him that you made a mistake. You're counting from when Babel came to power, or when they conquered Eretz Yisrael. You need to be counting from the Churban. So Midkama Binoisi, since he's saying I was thinking into the Sfarim, like the calculator, Miklal the Tar, which implies that he made a mistake. And in fact, the Malach comes and tells him you have to understand what the 70 years means. Okay, but the bottom line is you do seem to have a stira in the Psukim. One pasuk in Yirmiyahu says that when Babel is filled up 70 years, which implies from when their empire began, or at least from when they conquered Eretz Yisrael. But then you have another pasuk where also Yirmiyahu says from the destruction of Yerushalayim, and those things are 19 years apart or 18 years apart. This that we're saying Lois Babel is talking about that after the 70 years of Babel, meaning after 70 years of Babel's rule over Eretz Yisrael, there will be a Pekidya. Hashem will remember the Jewish people by having Kodesh make his proclamation. Doesn't mean it's going to be the ultimate Geula yet. This is what it says in the pasuk. Koyam a kodesh melech paras. So this is what kodesh, the king of paras, announced. Kol mamlechos ha'aretz nafam le'Hashem alokei shemayim. Hashem, the God of the heavens, has given me all of the lands of the earth. And we said yesterday, actually, that he didn't literally rule over all of them yet. But anyway, v'hu pakad alai, and he commanded upon me. Livnos lasbai Yerushalayim, to be Yerushalayim, to build him a house in Yerushalayim. He uses the same word pakad as efkoydeshem. So we see that it was a pekida, but it wasn't the ultimate thing. It was the beginning, yeah. But then during that 18 years, nobody was sure what was going to happen, except that Daniel was told by the Malach. Interesting thing, by the way, Josephus says now besides that, Yirmiyahu had said that after 70 years there's going to be a Pekidah. Many, 100 years earlier, Yeshaya had said a number of nevuahs about Kodesh, one of which the Gemara is going to quote now. So actually, Josephus says an interesting thing. This is how Kodesh was convinced to actually fulfill this role. People brought him the book of Yeshaya, and he read it. Look, 100 years before I was born, there's already a Jewish navi predicting that I'm going to reign and I'm going to be a world emperor. Then yeah, I got to fulfill what he says over there. Dorosh of Nachum Varuchista. My dichtiv. What does it mean? The pasuk says in Yeshaya, Koyama Hashem l'meshicha. So says Hashem to His anointed one, L'kodesh Hashem zakti b'imine. To Kodesh, who I strengthen His right hand. Question is, Kodesh Mashiach? Kodesh is not anointed by Hashem. How are we calling Him l'meshicha? It means like this. It means like this. Hashem is saying to Mashiach, the ultimate Mashiach, he says, Kovel ani loch al Kodesh. I am complaining to you about look what Kodesh did, that he didn't live up to what he was supposed to. Ani amarti hu yivne beis tivi kabetz golo yosai. I said in the pasuk over there that he will rebuild my city and he'll gather in my goliaths. Meaning Kodesh. Kodesh was supposed to be personally involved, that he personally will be involved in building the Beth Mikdash and in getting the Jewish people back into Eretz Yisrael. V'hu amar, and what does he actually say in his announcement? Mibachem, the kolam eviyal, anybody who wants from his people can go up. Like, I'm not going to personally get involved. If you want, you can go. So the Eivishter is saying to Mashiach, like, look, Kodesh didn't even live up to his potential. Rashi says an interesting thing. Throughout Tanakh, we always have, throughout the books of Tanakh that use the regular system of Tzurup, you always have, whenever there's a Zarka, a Tzurup, always one or two words, or three or whatever words after it is a Segel. The Zarka and the Segel together show that they are ends of a clause in the pasuk. Here you have an odd thing, which you never find anywhere else in Tanakh. The word Lekodesh, in this pasuk, Koyama Hashem L'Mashichai Lekodesh, the word Koyama Hashem L'Mashichai has a Zarka, but then there's no segel. Then it continues, L'kodesh asher zakti b'imine has other tra. So I have to separate the word l'mashichai from kodesh. And to show that they don't go together, l'mashichai is not a description of kodesh, but rather the Eivishter is complaining to Mashiach, look how kodesh didn't live up to what he was supposed to. Why is he complaining to Mashiach? Because if Kodesh had lived up to it, if he had personally gotten involved and made sure that all the Jewish people actually go back to Eretz Yisrael, instead of just saying whoever wants can go, there would have been the Geulah Asidah, the real Mashiach would have come then. So like this, Hashem is complaining to Mashiach, you know, it's too bad, you had to be delayed so long because Kodesh didn't live up to what he was. It's in Yeshaya, it's in Teref Memhei of Yeshaya. No, he's a guy. What? Because if the Eivishter said a nevuah about him, and he's so impressed by that nevuah that he's going to do something, that he should have done the whole thing, not just, you know. Yes. Which is a very rare thing, by the way, yeah. Going back to the Megillah, Pasuk says, Chel Paras and Madai ha-Paratimim. One Pasuk speaks of the army of Paras and Madai, the Paratimim meaning the noblemen. But then at the end of the Megillah, you have the kings of Madai and Paras. So what is that? So Rashi explains the problem is that first you're talking the paratimim, the noblemen, it implies are from Madai. Later on, at the end of the Megillah, it implies the kings are from Madai. L'malchem Madai or Paras. Marsha says, actually, the question is a little bit different. The question is, why first does it say Paras or Madai, and later on it says Madai or Paras? The answer is, Amar Rava, Asnuye Astu Bahadadi, because these nations of Paras and Madai made a deal with each other. At one point, history tells us that Persia actually conquered Madai and made it a province, but because it was a very important one, they made this deal between them. Iminan Malchi Minaychu Ifrachi. If the kings are going to come from us, then the noblemen will come from you. The governors, whatever. Iminaychu Malchi Minan Ifrachi. And if the kings are going to be from your nation, then the noblemen and princes and whatnot will be from ours. So it always switch back and forth. So therefore, you have at the beginning of the Megillah, the noblemen are from Madai, but Parak is Paradas first, because Ahasuerus is the king from Paradas. Later on, at different times during the history of that empire, the king provided the kings, and therefore to the Malchi Mada. Continues the pasuk, "Baharoses Osher Kavod Malchuse," that Ahasuerus at his party showed off the riches of the glory of his kingdom. And after Yikaru Tiferes Belasa, and the honor of his beautiful greatness. What does this mean? Amar Rav Yosi Bachanina, Malama Shalavish Bigdei Kohuna. This teaches us that he wore the Bigdei Kohuna. Yeah, the ones from the Beis Hamikdash. Yeah, because they were in his treasury. Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you in a second what Hagoyes Habach adds the words Nisatif Ba'amad. He wrapped himself in it and stood up. Which actually, some of the Foreshim say, this is an example of a Hashverish realizing, I'm going to be using the stuff from the Beis Hamikdash, fine, because I figure the Jews are not going to be redeemed from exile, but I'm going to be careful with them. I don't want to anger the Eibishter. So fine, I'll wear them at my party, but I'm going to wear them respectfully, like Nisaptif Ba'amah, like you stand and you're regally wearing them. How do we know? Because here it describes it as the glory of the beauty of his greatness. The big Kohuna, when the Eibishter tells Moshe to make him in Parashat Tetzaveh, are described, the L'chavod for honor, L'tiferes, and for beauty. So we see that he wore them. Next, the pasuk continues, so what does the pasuk describe? How he made a 180-day party, and then he made a 7-day party for the people in Shushan. So now the first party, the 180-day party, we said, was for the noblemen, the army, whatever, the movers and shakers in the kingdom. The second one we're saying was for all the people of Shushan. So, Rav Shmuel, Chadam HaMelech Pikeach Haya, B'Chadam HaMelech Tipish Haya. One says this shows that he was a smart king, and the other one says it shows that he was a foolish king. Mandam HaMelech Pikeach Haya, because Shapir Abed, Dekarev Rechika Bereisha. He did well by being Makarev, the further away people first, by having the people scatter the movers and shakers all over the empire, the army and whatever, by binding them to him first, and then he'll deal with the people in the city. Dibnei Mase, as far as the people in the city, Kolemas, the volume of fire, who whenever he wants, he can pacify them. First it's important to secure the loyalty of the faraway people, because they're the ones more likely to rebel. The other opinion that says he was foolish, says on the contrary, first he should be trying to win the favor of the local people. This way, if the faraway people rebel, at least he has the people in the city on his side. So therefore, he's a melech tipish for starting out with the faraway people. Marsha explains a little background to this, that the Targum Sheni on Megillat Esther says that actually in the early years of Ahasuerus' reign, a number of the governors of the provinces rebelled against him. And that one reason, besides what the Gemara said, why he made the party in his third year to celebrate the 70 years are over, another reason is because he finally put down the rebellion and is settled in his kingdom. So that's what we're talking about right here. Given that they rebelled against him, is it smarter to first be making a party to win back their loyalty, or would it have been smarter to start with the local people and afterwards you establish your local base and then you go out and deal with the faraway people?
When Haman came to him saying that Haman was a Kura, that seems to be Rachab. Could that be the reason why he's talking by?
No, that's because the Jewish people, you're saying, are scattered all over the empire, but what does that have to do with anything? No, when he invited the people from all over the empire, it's not the Jews. He's inviting the noblemen, the princes, the army, whatever. That has nothing to do with the Jews, per se. Comes a famous thing. They ask Rav Shimon ben Yochai, the Talmidim, why were the enemies of the Jewish people, again, the usual euphemism meaning the Jewish people themselves, of that generation, why were they deserving to be exterminated? Amar lahem, so Rav Shimon tells them, Imratem, you tell me. Amar lahi, so they say, Mipnei shenenu misudasa shalosa rasha, because they had hana from the suda of that rasha, the Ahasuerus. If that's the case, only the ones in Shushan should be killed, not the ones all over the world. They didn't participate in that. Okay, so the Medrash answers to that. They said, okay, apparently the Gemara here doesn't like that answer. Okay, Emirata. So fine, you tell us. You don't like our answer. So what do you say? He says to them because they bowed down to the Tzelem. Now, which Tzelem are we talking about? Marshal discusses, are we talking about that they just... Rashi says, B'mei Nebuchadnezzar. Back in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, when Nebuchadnezzar set up his statue and everybody bowed down to it, except Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, that's what we're talking about. Marsha discusses, do we mean that, or do we mean the fact that when Haman came around with his telem that everybody bowed to him except for Mordechai? So Marsha says it's possible a little bit of both, but mainly it has to be, like Rashi says, the one from Nebuchadnezzar, because if it was the one from Haman, again, you have the same question. The Jews outside of Shushan aren't involved in that. They asked him, Amr loy v'chi masei panim yesh b'davar. Okay, if you're telling me that it's because the Jews bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol, fine. Does the Eibishter play favorites? After all, it's true. If they bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol, the Taka do deserve to Chas v'Shalom. So why ultimately did the Eibishter change over things and then have Haman hang? Amr lahem. But some of the Farshim point out that in particular when it comes to Avodah Zarah, when a person worships Avodah Zarah, they can do tshuva. A person can do tshuva for any Avodah, but worshiping Avodah Zarah is more serious. It makes a person a mumer. It makes them more like a goy. And the goy, maybe she does not know it's upon him too. That's part of the question. Amar lahem, heim lo... That's the question. In other words, why the question basically, according to that way of looking at it, is why did the Eibishter give them a chance to do tshuva? Amar lahem, he says, Amar lahem, heim lo yasu ela lefanim. They only did it for pretend. They didn't really believe in this idol when they bowed down to it. They did it out of fear. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo yasei man ela lefanim, says lefanim. So the Eibishter also only did it to them for show, like to scare them, but not that he was planning to actually have them wiped out, Chas v'Shalom. Behind her deceive. Thus the Pasuk says, Kilo ina mi libay, that the Eibishter does not afflict from his heart. The Pasuk continues, Vayagde b'nei ish, that he causes sorrows to people. Meaning, Marsha explains, when a person doesn't do an aveda mi libay with his full heart, he just does it on the outside, then the Eibishter is only Vayagde b'nei ish. He causes them yoga, and he causes them sorrow, but not to actually harm them.
This gives reasons to the Rambam about saying.
The Rambam didn't talk about the Anusim in Spain. He was talking about Anusim under the Muslims, but that's different because he said Islam is not a Vedazara. But actually, there is a lot to talk about these few lines, so I'll tell you a few things. First of all, let's go with, you know, so first of all, so we're saying, you know, there's a bunch of questions over here. If they're asking him the question why they deserve Klaya, why is he turning the question back to them, Imuratem? We don't know, that's why we're asking. What's their answer? How does they answer with the Suda? Because they ate from a Suda, therefore they're Chayav Misa.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially, it may not have even been alive. We're going to talk soon that it was a Tzoni Ishvi, it was kosher food, yeah. So,
doesn't mean it's obvious because they ate kosher food.
No. So some of the Farshim say that he's saying, Imru Atem, he's saying, like, you guys are assuming they even deserve punishment. You're saying this Chayav Kloya, but let's first unpack the assumption. You're assuming B'chlal they deserve punishment. Why? And they answered, Meshinenu Misudasa Shalaita Rasha. And he tells them that's not enough. But that's the Imuratim. The Rebbe once talked about it, the idea is that the deeper idea of it is that Rashbi wants to make them into Mashbi. Don't just be Makablam from me, be Mashbiya. Come up with your own idea. As far as the Meshinenu Misudasa Shalaita Rasha, what's the issue? There, again, different Mephoshim talk about. One possibility is that, yes, the food was Tereif, in which case there is that, but even then, so what? Because Tereif, that's such a terrible thing, at worst to lab. So some Mephoshim say, we're talking about Chelev, the Dam, which involves Tareif. Other Mephoshim say that we saw before, why did Achashverosh make this party? One reason is to celebrate that the Jews are never going to get out of Golos, according to his way of thinking. To have Hana from Sutta Sutta, that's a pretty serious thing. The Rebbe talked about it, there's a famous sikha that Rebbe talked about in Chelek Lamed Aleph, a different explanation. It's more than that, the Rebbe said. Because the expression of the Gemara is not that they ate from the Sutta of the Rasha. It's Shenenu Mitzudas Shleish Rasha. That they enjoyed it. What's the issue? The Rebbe said, they felt like basically our existence in this time depends on the goodwill of Achashverosh. So now Achashverosh invited us to his party. Ah, we made it. Now we're comfortable, you know. Now we really made it. Now we're sitting clear. And what happens then comes along the Gzeira to show them you're not even just to show them. Actually, the Rebbe makes a point to the Sifra. It's not even to show them. It's look, if you guys think you depend on Achashverosh's goodwill rather than on Torah and Mitzvot rather than on the Eibishter, fine. Then you lose the protection of the Eibishter. It's a natural thing. You're Kivsach. That's your one sheep in Shivim Zevim among the 70 wolves. Fine. If the shepherd, if the Eibishter is not looking after you, then yeah, the sheep's going to be torn apart. What happened? They did tshuva and they overcame that. But that's the nene misudasa shalaita rasha, is that they were nene from the fact. And the Rebbe used to talk about this a number of times. There's a number of times in letters that Rebbe pointed out how you have a different Jewish organizations, like they think, you know, oh, we made it when we get a prominent goy to speak by our dinner or something. You know, is that really the right way to think? the thing would have no importance if you can't get if you can't get that important go there. That's the Nanuma Sudasa Shalit Sudasa mentality that we talk about.
It's very exceptional. The only time in history that that's happened.
That's exactly, that Eber points out, actually. That's the only time, well, it's also the only time in history when the Jewish people were all under one empire.
Yes.
Yes.
But that specifically is...
Yes. So as going back to Nebuchadnezzar and going back to Haman, there is a lot of discussion about that also, which sort of gets into your thing about Muranos. First of all, the Gemara does talk about in different places, and we know you're supposed to be Yehorek Bal Yavar, not to bow down to Avodah Zarah. Tosfos explains in a few places, and one of them, Tosfos explains in a few places that actually this statue of Nebuchadnezzar was not necessarily an Avodah Zarah. He didn't necessarily make it as a symbol of a power other than Hashem. He made it as a symbol of his own majesty, which in that case, bowing down to it is not really an issue of worshipping Avodah Zarah. It's a matter of Chilul Hashem. But a Chilul Hashem is a pretty serious thing.
But he made it, or he inherited it?
No, he made it. He set it up over there. The Gemara explains, the Medrash explains, whatever, that he made it. He made it out of the gold, out of all the gold and silver that had been plundered from Yerushalayim, whatever. But yeah, he set it up. But according to that, he set it up, according to Tosfos, his way of looking at it, he didn't set it up as a geshke. He set it up as everybody, whenever you come in front of the king, you bow down out of respect. Same thing, you bow down to my statue out of respect. So Hanan Mishon Azaya didn't want it because it's a matter of a Chilul Hashem. Not because the matter of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara actually says in a few places, Exubus is one of them, that if I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, if instead of ordering them thrown into a furnace, if Nebuchadnezzar had ordered them whipped or tortured, they would have given in and bowed, because they wouldn't have been able to withstand that. If it's an actual Avodah Zarah, no question, Yehorek Bal Yavar. But because it was only in honor of the king, therefore technically La Halacha was allowed. So, but still, we're saying over here, Mepnei Shtakul Tzelem, and afterwards also, so that this is also the idea why Mordechai was so careful not to bow down to Haman, even though he could have used the excuse that everybody's bowing down to Haman out of respect, not necessarily as an idol. And Menos HaLevi even talks about that one day, Bedavka, Haman took off the idol from his clothing to see if Mordechai is going to bow down, and he still wouldn't, because he needed to do the sack and this thing the Jewish people did.
Otherwise, he would.
Otherwise, yeah, because the same way as you bow down to a prince, to a king or a nobleman or whatever, yeah. Yeah, like they bow to each other as respect, yeah. That's a different thing. The Medrash says that Mordechai said, my ancestor didn't bow down to yours, so I'm not going to bow down to you either. Okay, yeah, these are all very nice drushes, but I mean, practically speaking, getting down to brass tacks, I mean, if Mordechai knows that it's going to endanger the Jewish people by him not bowing down, Yemen not bowing down to Esau, very nice, but still, but he needed to do it in order to fix up the mistake that they had made with Nebuchadnezzar's statue.
And Esau could have been considered a king.
Yeah. Actually, there's an interesting Michtam Elio from Elio Dessler brings an interesting thing in the name of the Alter Rebbe. I don't know where the Alter Rebbe says this, but anyway, if you look at the story of as an illustration of how the obvious way of looking at things is not always the correct way of looking at things. You look at the story of the Megillah stretches out over 9 years. The party is in the third year. The Gzeira is in the 12th year. What happens, if you're writing a newspaper article or on your blog or right now the Jewish people are in danger. From Haman, what brought this about? The obvious thing would be to say because Mordechai was stubborn and didn't want to bow down to Haman. What's the real reason? Because we're saying over here in the Gemara, because of the Mishnah, because Nenu Mitzudasa, because going back to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, Mordechai not bowing down to Haman is not the cause of the trouble. That's the cause of the Yeshua. That's the cause. That's the trigger for the situation being fixed up and the Jewish people being saved. So you see, from the story of the Megillah, how the obvious answer is not always the obvious causes are not always the real one. Yeah. Basically, yeah.
And also, possibly
the same
thing with what's going on in Gaza right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The Megillah says, "Bachasal ginas bitan amelach." That the party took place in the courtyard. The bachasal means the courtyard. Ginas means the garden. Bisan means either the inner courtyard or the house or whatever. So what is it? Where exactly did this party take place? Bachasal ginas bitan amelach. So Rav Shmuel, Chad Amar Haroy L'Chotzer L'Chotzer, one says that whoever was suitable to be placed in the Chotzer, like the lower ranking people, went into the Chotzer. Haroy L'Gina L'Gina, whoever is on a higher rank and deserves to be in the garden, closer to the palace, goes in the garden. Haroy L'Bisan L'Bisan, whoever deserves to be in the actual palace, goes in the palace. The Chadoma, the other one says, Hashivan b'chotzer v'layach z'katan. He put, he started by putting them in the chotzer, and it wasn't big enough. It didn't fit everybody. Beginner v'layach z'katan, so then he put more people, the overflow, go into the garden. It still didn't fit. Achichnis and labisan, until he brings them into the bisan, into the actual building, v'ach z'katan, and that fit the rest of the people. Next, the pasuk describes the beds and the hangings and whatnot. Chur karpas u'tcheles, it says. So my chur, karpas and chelas, because karpas actually the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute. Chelas we understand. What's chur and what's karpas? So my chur, Rav Amar Chori Chori, Rav says it means that they had draperies, hangings, that are made with a lot of holes. They're woven, like lace, were made with a lot of holes. The Aruch says the idea of it was, this way you have, people can see each other. Shmuel says that chur is meloshin white. The Aramaic word for white is chivar. So chur means white. He put out white silk for them. He draped white silk for them. What's karpas? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Chanina, korim shel pasim. It means cushions of pasim of different kinds of fabric. Or different colors. No. We're talking about the hangings and the decorations and the bedspreads and whatnot by the party.
Okay.
So we're saying yet chur. Having said that, actually, the ches of the word chur is large in the Megillah. If you look in a Megillah, the word letter with ches of the word chur is large. And then Mefarshim say that that's hidden at the 8 big dikurunma that he wore. But here we're talking about the simple meaning, because we're talking the actual decorations by the party. So we're saying that the chur is either lace or white silk, and karpas is karim shel pasim, is a cushion made out of different multicolored materials. Next, agriya kesef amudeshesh. You had these on poles of silver and then vertical poles of sheish of marble. Next, mitzvah zahav v'kesef. He had beds, I mean, couches for the people to sit and recline on of gold and silver. Why gold and silver? Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a haroi l'kesef v'kesef. Whoever deserved to be put on silver would be put on silver. Haroi l'zahav, the higher ranking people who deserve to go on gold, l'zahav would go on gold. Amalei Rav Nechemi, and came out the matzah kin of v'suda. So Rav Nechemi tells him, why? In that case, people are going to be jealous of each other. I'm sitting on a silver one. I'm looking over at the next guy has gold, and I'm going to be jealous of him. Achashverosh is trying to avoid that kind of thing. Ella, Hamish or Kesef or Aglan shall Zahav. Or rather, what it means is the beds themselves were made out of silver, the feet of the bed, the legs of the bed were made out of gold. Why not the opposite? So Marsha says because the actual bed itself would have been covered with the bedspread. You're not going to see the silver anyway. The legs of the bed are not going to be covered, so you'll see them, so therefore you might as well make them out of gold. One of the Mefarshim and Yaakov talks about the idea that you kind of have, like, if you look at the description, as Gemara is going to continue with the next thing, the description of the precious stones they use, like Achashverosh did sort of the opposite of the way you would usually expect. He had, like, fabrics up above, and then more and more expensive as you go further down until he had the floor was made out of precious stones. As if to show, like, look how rich and powerful I am, that precious stones, which most people would have, like, you know, would have as, like, the most precious thing, I'm putting them on the floor for people to walk on. So in the same way over here, he made the bed, the legs of the beds out of gold, and the beds themselves out of silver.
So that for him it was...
To show for him, he can afford it, yeah. So Tosfos mentions that. Tosfos says the difference is that... Tosfos says the difference is they, when it comes to the different places where they're located, they don't see each other. So therefore, there's not as much jealousy. Now, Shamkin over here, if the gold and silver are all together, then people are going to be jealous of each other. Some other Mepharshim talk about the idea that maybe what it was is, according to the first opinion, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that some were on silver and some were on gold. You could say the ones who are closer to the palace are on silver, the ones who are further away from the palace are on gold. So that way, everybody has some kind of advantage. Either he's showing that you're higher ranking by being closer to the palace, or he's showing that you're higher ranking by you get a gold couch.
In the Mishkan, it was just the opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, none of them were silver.
In the Mishkan, yeah, the closer you got to the Kodesh Kodashim, it was gold, yeah.
It was gold.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Next, the pasuk says that the floor was made of bahat v'shesh. What does that mean? What does the word bahat mean? Shesh, the Gemara evidently understood, means marble. But what's bahat? Amar Rabasi, avonim shemischoitetos al baleihen. These are precious stones that are mischoitetos on their owners. Rashi, there's a lot of different explanations of what mischoitetos means. Rashi says it means that machaptim, like you have to dig after them, like it takes a tremendous amount of effort for the average person to get them. And here Achashverosh is using them for the floor. A lot of other different explanations. The Aruch brings a few of them. One of them is that mischoitetos means that a person has pleasure from them. And a very interesting one he brings from Rabbeinu Chananel is that mischoitetos is meloshon chet. It would be the average, these are such precious stones that the average person, it would be considered a sin. It would be considered an offense against the king for a private person to have such precious jewels in their possession. Like if you have such things, they automatically belong to the treasury. Achashverosh being the king, of course, he has it. Thus we see the pasuk describes precious stones that are suitable for a crown, misnoisos alad masay, misnoisos over his land, which misnoisos, Rashi says this from the Meloshon Nisoyin. Again, Rashi said misnoisos means like a person has to dig a lot and will go through a lot of trouble to get these stones. Misnoisos means a person has to go through a lot of nisyonos to get them. Similar idea. Next, the pasuk continues with dar v'secharis, that the floor was also made out of dar and secharis. What does that mean? Rav Amar Dori Dori. Rav says the word dar means there were rows and rows of precious stones. Or Shmuel Amar Eben Tervi Yesh B'Pracha Ayam B'Dorashma. There's a certain precious stone that you can find in the cities near the seacoast, which is called Dora. Hashiva B'Em Tasoda. What he did is he took one of these stones and put it in the middle of the party room over there. U'Meir Lahem Katzar Raim, and it brightened up for them. It shone like the middle of the day. Then Yayada says what he did is he put it like a mirror to reflect the light so that the whole place is lit up. So far we have, according to Rav, dar v'secharis means rows, dar means rows in Aramaic, v'secharis means around. Like round and around the palace, you have rows of precious stones. Shmuel is saying dar means is the name of the stone, dara, and v'secharis, Rashi says, is related to the word sihara, which means the moon. So it's as bright as the moon. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a braisa, another meaning of it, shekara dror l'chol balei schora. It means that he declared an exemption, dror means freedom, he declared an exemption l'chol balei schora to all the merchants. He reduced the taxes. So this way everybody is happy and is in a good mood for the party. He made up for it at the end, vayasim ha-malach ha-chashverosh mach, so yeah. Next, the pasuk says, "V'hashkis v'chlei zahav." He gave them to drink in golden cups. V'kelim v'kelim shonim, and different kind and kelim of different kinds of kelim. Mas meshunim in Barilei. Different, the word would be meshunim. Amar Rava, it means yotza bas kova amar lahem. A bas kova came out and said to them, Tachashverosh and the people, "V'shonim kolu mipnei kelim." The original one, the early ones, meaning Belshazzar and his people, were destroyed because of the kelim. V'atem shonim behem, and you're repeating the same mistake. So the kalim, in other words, because of these kalim, the kalim, the Moshe kalim, they were destroyed, and now shonim, and now you're repeating the same mistake.
Meaning the kalim of the Beis
Hamikdash. The kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, yeah. No, I guess not. If they had heard the Baskel, they would have done something about it. But yeah. One thing is though that the Gemara is going to explain now a couple of things about how the order about the drinking was, and Mefarshim explained that Achashverosh was, in his mind at least, he was trying to be careful with it. He's saying, you know what, Belshazzar had this completely drunken party. I'm going to be more careful about it. Yes, we're using the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, but I'm going to make it that we drink in a more derech eretz specific way, kind of. Sort of, yeah. So when the pasuk says v'yein malchus rov, much royal wine. What's the word Rav mean? Me and Marcus Rav, what does Rav mean? I'm a Rav, Malama, Chakalachad Bechad, Hishko, Yain, Shagodu, Hemen, Rishonim. Means that each person was given to drink wine that is older than him. Which one idea of that is, that wine that's just a little bit older than the person is suitable for him. It won't make him quite as drunk. So that's part of this idea then of him trying to make it more of a mental thing. Next, the passage continues, Vashsiya Kados. The drinking was according to law. There's no forcing. My kados, according to what law? Amar Rav Chanan, Mishum Rameir, kados shel Torah. It means the drinking was like according to the law of the Torah. Just like in the law of the Torah, if we look at the korbanos, the eating is more than the drinking. The amount of mincha that's brought on the mizbeach, the amount the mizbeach eats, so to speak, is more than it drinks. You have three etzroinim of flour and a half a hin of wine, for example, for a pyre, where there's a lot more flour there than there is wine. So there's more eating than drinking. But it wasn't necessarily the Ayin Nesach. Wait. After Dotsa, Shalai said Rosh, Achila Merubim Mishtiyah. The same thing. At Rosh Suda, the eating was more than the drinking. Maratz Chayes quotes from the Vilna Gaon a different explanation, an interesting explanation of this Kadosh Shal Torah. We learn in Pirkei Avos, Kachi Dagu Shal Torah, Pas B'melach Teicha, you should eat bread and salt, U'mayim B'mesura Tishta, and drink water in measure. By the Pas, it doesn't give an amount. By the water, it does. The Masura is a small measurement. So therefore, you see that when it comes to how should a person eat when they're learning Torah, you eat more than you drink. Therefore, Achashverosh did the same kind of thing. And again, the Parshim say that the idea of it was, he didn't want it to just be a complete drunken orgy like it was by Belshazzar's thing. He wanted it to be a more menschliche thing, more respectful thing, and therefore more eating than drinking. They're eating and drinking. But the point is, he wanted to make it that it's not just, you know, they're not stam getting drunk. But there's also, part of the idea is the Poshim say, and we'll get to now when we get to Lassus Kirtzonish Ish, that part of the idea was that Achashverosh wanted that when the Jews are at the party, at the second party, the seven-day party, there should be no excuse that, well, we were forced into it, or we were drunk, or whatever, so Badavka arranges things as much as possible, that the food is kosher, at least according to one, according to some of the Poshim, the wine is in moderation, nobody's forced to drink, etc. Now, when the Eidishter gets angry at them, they're not going to have the excuse, but we were forced into it. Ein oynes, then the pasuk says there was no forcing. It means that each person was given wine from his country. Again, the kind of wine that he's used to, which won't make him as drunk. So this way he can drink only as much as he wants.
So that's serious what he said before.
No, before he said he gave him wine that's older than him.
No, not about the wine, but he said that they were forced into
it. No, we didn't. We said, Mishanenu Sadasa, they had Hanah.
Yeah, but there was one opinion that said that they were.
No, maybe they're forced in the sense that if the king invites you to his banquet, you're not getting out of it so easily. But they're still, the problem was the nenu, the problem was that they're enjoying, we're on an equal level with all the other nations. But that was the problem. Next, the pasuk continues, lasses kirtzon ish v'ish, that it was to be done according to the will of man and man. Amar Rava, it means lasses kirtzon Mordechai v'Haman. It means that Achashverosh arranged the party to comply with the will of Mordechai and of Haman. How do we ish for ish refers to them? Because ish Yehudi and Haman, Mordechai defeated ish Yehudi and Haman, ish Savoyev. So each of them is called ish in the Megillah. So Rashi explains, in other words, that Rashi explains that what it means is Achashverosh put Haman and Mordechai in charge. They're the Sorei Amashkim by the party. So Haman gives as much as he wants to whoever he's giving, and Mordechai gives as much as he wants to whoever he's giving to. Other Mepharshim explain, it means that Achashverosh made sure Haman is the leader of his people, Gohim of Shushan, Mordechai is the leader of his people, so each one of them, the party will be according to whatever, to according to both of them. You know, for example, according to Haman, let's say that the Jews are going to be invited in Achashverosh's mind, hopefully that they'll sin. And in Mordechai, that they won't be forced into drinking and so on and so forth. The Mordechai didn't want them there in the first place, right? But at least, as much as possible, according to as much as within what Achashverosh is going to do, officially at least it has Mordechai's hashgacha at the party, whether they should have been there is another matter, but yeah, that's the Kirtzon Ish V'Ish. Actually, one of the Mepharshim, I think Manoi Salevi maybe, says an interesting idea, or Al-Sheikh, I forget, says an interesting thing, that for example, when we said before that, he was trying to make sure that nobody gets drunk, that was both according to Mordechai and Haman. Mordechai didn't want them to get drunk, because Jews shouldn't be getting drunk. Haman didn't want them to get drunk, like we said, because that way the Eibishter will be angry with them, you don't have an excuse, you were drunk and you couldn't, and you didn't know better. Yeah. Next, the pasuk says, "Gam Vashti Amalka Osa Mishte Noshim." Also, the Queen Vashti made a party for the women, Beit Hamalchus, in the palace. Not even Beit Hamalchus, Beit Hanoshim, by the way. The party for the women should have been in the women's house, in the women's quarters. Yeah. What? Yeah. that maybe, well, we find later on that there were, we find later on that there were men's quarters and women's quarters in the palace. Preposterous. We're assuming that if there's a women's party headed by Vashti, it should be in the women's part of the palace.
Not to understand.
Omer Rava Shneim L'dvar Averdes, Gavnu. Both Achashverosh and and Vashti intended that the party should end up as, it should end up in Averdes. In the men and the women being attracted to each other. In other words, so therefore, she got to put the women in the same packet, in the same building as the men, so they can see each other and get attracted to each other. Hainu da'amri inshi, this is like what people say, ihu b'kari v'itzei b'butzini. When you have a husband and wife, he is with large pumpkins, she is with small ones. Meaning, Rashi says, in other words, it's the same species, it's one large, one small. The same thing, when you have, you know, when you have a man who's a noyif, then usually his wife will also be of that type also. So the same thing, you know, here we find Achshverosh was a pritzistic guy, he wants to show off Vashti to everybody. So you see that Vashti is the same kind of person, she's also a pritzistic person. Why she didn't want to come to the party, we'll get to soon. But, yes, when Achashverosh called her, we'll get to soon. But, no, that's where they might have had them separate, but at least all in the same room, so that they'll end up mingling. Yeah. Other Mefarshim explain this, Iyu B'Kori V'Itzi B'Butzini. There's a few other explanations. One of them is that Kori and Butzini are actually two different types of pumpkins. Kori have small leaves, and Butzini have large ones. Or the other way around, Kari have large leaves, Butzini have small ones. So the marshal means, in other words, that you have a man who is mizaneh, like he tries to cover himself, like he with a large leaf. Such a person tends to have a wife who you like the small leaves, like she didn't even bother hiding what she's doing. So like the same thing over here, Achashverosh is a parut, and Vashti is an even bigger prutza. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayem Ashvi Ketov like a Melech Vayoyin." On the seventh day, when the king's heart was happy from the wine, what do you mean? Altrad Hashtalei Tabliber B'Chamra. Up until now, his heart hasn't been happy with wine. What happened after today? Amar Rava Yom Ashvi Shabbos Toya. When it says Yom Ashvi, it doesn't mean seventh day of the party. It means it was Shabbos. Sheisrael Ochlin V'Shoysin, and on Shabbos, when Jews eat and drink, Maschilin B'Divrei Torah or B'Divrei Tzadikim, they start saying Divrei Torah. They start praising the Eibishter. But when goyim eat and drink, ain maskilin el b'divrei tiflus. They only start. They start talking about immorality. So in other words, the point is that on Yom Hashvi you have the contrast between Jewish people who are sitting at their Shabbos tables versus Achashverosh and his people. And so it was by the Suda of that Russia. Halalu Omrim Modius Nois, the people from Media were saying that the Median women are more beautiful. Halalu Omrim Parsois Nois, and the Persian men are saying the Persian women are more beautiful. Amalai Machashverosh, the Achashverosh tells them, you know what, you think you're both wrong. Klishani Mishtamishboy, the Kaili that I use, meaning the wife who I'm married to, Aina Loi Modi Vloi Parsi, is neither a Median nor a Persian, nor a Kasti. She's descended from the Kasti, from Babylonia. Vashti is the daughter of Belshazzar.
Yeah.
You want to see her? Amrulay Ain, they said sure. Uvavad shetehe aruma. But as long as she's undressed. Now why would they even claim such a thing? So Mefarshim say, because the simple meaning is because they're telling him, of course she'll look beautiful. Of course she comes in royal robes. Anybody will look beautiful. Bring her without the royal robes, you know, then we can attack a judge. Different Mefarshim, and that's where you have the pasuk over there that he asked her to come b'keter. He ordered her to come b'keter malchus, meaning only the royal crown and nothing else. Having said that, there are some Mefarshim who say that it doesn't mean literally undressed. I mean, you know, even the goyim are not going to be that low down. It means like in plain, clothing. Like in clothing doesn't really befit her. Now, why did she deserve such a thing? The way that a person acts, so it's measured out to him in Hashemayim. We learn from this that the wicked Vashti used to bring Jewish women, and she would force them to strip, and force them to do work on Shabbos. So therefore, she ended up getting punished with the having to come undressed on Shabbos, and that was her downfall. Thus it says later on in the pasuk, after these things happened, when Achashverosh's anger calmed down, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what had been decreed upon her. Which means he realized, what she had done, because after all, everyone knew what she did. She didn't do anything. She didn't come. Now that's a shev al-tasa. She did, though, by forcing these Jewish women to do this. Yeah. So that's Kashem Sha'asta, just as she did, Kach Nigzor Aleha, so was decreed upon her. Minashemayim, yeah.
Okay.
that. What's the deal over here? I mean, the simple meaning is obvious. You know, she wanted to humiliate these Jewish women and force them to work on Shabbos. There are a couple of interesting ideas. Again, there are some Mephoshim who say on Shabbos. That's what we're saying throughout her, during the time when she was queen. Yeah. Some of Farshim again say that Arumus doesn't maybe mean necessarily literally stripped to the skin. It just means it's not in Shabbistic clothing. Maril Diskin says an interesting idea. She was having them weave clothes for her, which clothes for a queen involve gold and silver and all. So, like, she claims, you know, her excuse is, I don't want them to steal anything, so therefore I don't want you putting anything in your pocket, so therefore you can't be wearing clothing. What's going to happen at the end of your work shift, you might steal some stuff and take it home. She made them work on Shabbos. She knows they're not going to break Shabbos by carrying it home. So therefore the script and therefore the Shabbos. That's Mariel Diskin says that was the excuse she used. There's an interesting thing. Chassam Sofer once said a drasha about this, something along the lines of that it wasn't so much that she's what does it mean she's forcing Jewish women to be undressed on Shabbos means like she was setting the standard of a princess dress, and of course, you know, people always follow, you know, the latest dictates of fashion, so therefore, you know, you have a lot of Jewish women are also not dressing sneistic. That's the rumor, is for a Jewish woman to be dressed on sneistic is like the equivalent of being completely undressed. Well, what happens? So he says an interesting idea then. So usually a person would be at home on Shabbos having his Shabbos table, and he has his women in the house are not dressed sneistic, and there's nothing he can do about it really. And he can't even really have a proper Shabbos table because, you know, you're not allowed to say Divrei Torah when you have such a thing. Now what happens? It's Shabbos. And whoever's Christmas dick is going to be by Vashti's party, now for the first time, the men have a chance to have a proper Shabbos at home, and that was the schus that finally brought about Vashti's downfall. And now you have, at the end, he says, so what happened? The upshot of it is, because of Mamuchan's advice, the order is sent out, Lias Kalish Serbeve. So, good, now, first of all, Vashti, the trendsetter, is gone. Second of all, Lias Kalish Serbeve. So a man is now in charge in his house, so he's able to get them to be theistic again. The Chassam Sofer was once saying this is a drasha to give Musa to his kahila about the people we're not dressing sneer. Yeah. Anyway. Then the pasuk continues about Tamoin Hamalka Vashti, that Vashti, Queen Vashti, refused to come. The question is why? We just said before that she was a prutza. We just said that both of them meant that it should end up being averus. By time of Layasoi, so Taka, why didn't she come? From this we learn that Tzaraas broke out on her. And both Rashi and Tosfos say, how do we know Tzaraas happened? Because we make a Gzeira Shavah. It says over here, it's a Nigzar Aleha. By Uziyahu, the king of Yehuda, when he got Tzaraas, it also says, Ki Nigzar Mibes Hashem. So we see that she broke out in Tzaraas. V'masnisatana bo Gavriel v'asala zono. A Braisa teaches that Gavriel came and made her a zono, a tail. Which a lot of Mepharshim talk about, does this mean literally that she actually had a tail like an animal? Marsha says, yeah. Other Mepharshim say not necessarily. The Rashba, for example, on Ein Yaakov talks about that maybe it doesn't mean literally a tail, it means like a growth of some kind. Like she got like a wart or a tumor or something, and she's embarrassed to come in front of everybody. Maral says similarly that maybe like all of a sudden she gained a whole bunch of weight and now she's embarrassed to come. It can also be called a zonav, like something extra on the body. Next, Vayikset HaMelach Mo, the Pasuk says the king was very angry. Amai Dokabe Kulahai, what's he so upset about? Okay, she doesn't want to come, but to be so angry. Amar Rava, because it wasn't just she refused to come. Shochalei, she sent him a message. Bar Ahurayra De'aba, the youth stable boy of my father. Now, Achashverosh wasn't literally Belshazzar's stable boy, but she means, like, you're nothing compared to my father. Ab Lakabal Lakabal Ab Alpha Khamra Shoti. My father, Belshazzar, it says by his party over there, he was able to drink in Kenegat 1,000 people, Valer Ravi, and he didn't get drunk. Bahu Gabri, Shtati Bakamre. That person, meaning you drink a little bit and all of a sudden you're going nuts. Bahu Gabri, she means she's saying. No, the Gemara Pashtus is changing it. She probably said it in person, yeah. Therefore, he's extremely upset. He's extremely angry. Yeah. Next, the king spoke to the Chachamim, a man Chachamim, Rabbanan. Why? Because now, Chachamim, Marsha points out, can mean Goyish Chacham also. But the Pasuk describes them also as Yoidei Ha'itim, the ones who know the time. That means specifically the Jewish Chachamim. Sheyoidim, La'abashanim, like Mechadashim, that they know how to declare Iber Yoren and how to declare new months. What he's going to the Jewish Chachamim. Amalahu Bainuali. He says to them, judge for me. Amru's Chacham said, now, hey, I mean, how are we going to do this? Name like Kapla, should we tell him killer? What's going to happen? Lamacha Pasik Lechamre. Soon his wine is going to wear off. Obari Laminan. And then he's going to demand her from us. In other words, we're going to get in trouble that we ordered her executed. Name Shavke, should we tell him leave her alone? Come Zalzal of Malchusa. But she did insult the king, and he's going to be mad at us now also. It's a no-win situation. Yeah, Amr Loi, so they told him, you know what, we can't get involved. Ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and we were exiled from our land, good advice has been taken away from us. We don't know how to judge capital cases. Zilagabe Amun and Moyav, so instead go to Amun and Moyav, to the sages of Amun and Moyav, the Yaskviduchtayu, they're still living in the original places, Kechamra, the Yotav Adurdaye, like wine that's sitting on its dregs, on its lees, in other words, all the sediment has already sank to the bottom, and the wine itself is clear. Maybe. The time Amr Lan and Fakwa, they were saying him Taka is a logical thing. The Pasuk says, Shanan Moyav min Urav. Moyav is complacent, is calm since their youth. Beshoikatu El Shmorav, they're sitting quietly on top of their lees. Again, like Marshall that they said about wine on the lees. V'loi Hurak Mikliyo Kli, it was not poured from one vessel into another, so it didn't get stirred up. Uvagorla Lavalach, they haven't gone into exile. Alkein Omad Taima Boy, therefore its taste is still in it. V'recha Lenomar, and its smell is not changed, its fragrance has not changed. So, yeah, they have a point, Taka. The people of Ammon and Moab are still, you have Ammonim and Moabim who are here serving at court. They've been living in their ancestral lands all these years. Go talk to them. Miyad, so immediately, he goes to his advisors who are going. Now, why does the Pasuk have to list their names? Amar Rav Levi, kol Pasuk zeh al shum korbanos ne'emar. This Pasuk, this whole Pasuk where it lists their names, is said, it's a reference to the korbanos. Why the korbanos? Because the idea is, as the Gemara is going to say now, the malachim are arguing to Hashem, look at the chusim of the Jewish people. You have to get rid of Vashti and allow the Jewish people to be saved. Yeah, you have to pave the way. You have to get rid of Vashti and pave the way for Esther. No, but the first of all, the malachim can know the future. But second, actually, they never once talked about in a sicha. We said before that Vashti was harassing the Jewish women and forcing them to work for her on Shabbos. So even just that alone, that those Jewish women are going to be saved, is already a big thing.
Is this Jews should not be involved in the union of
Christians? Not necessarily. I mean, we find historically many times they were. But, sometimes when you have a no-win situation like this, you've got to realize it and find a way to get out of it.
Look what happened to Abinadab, closely related to Hashem. Then
he would have managed to cancel the edict as well if it weren't for Torquemada, when you're able to, you're able to. In this case, the Chachamim realized we're not going to, there's nothing to be gained by doing this. Anyway, so Kol Pasuk Zal Shum Korbanos Ne'emar. This whole pasuk where it lists the seven advisors of Hashemedesh is said about the korbanos, namely. Karshina means Amru Malacha Asharos Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribbono Shel Olam, Klum Ekriv Lefanecha Karim B'nei Shana. Have the Goyim ever offered before you Karim, meaning lambs, B'nei Shana, that are within a year old? Karshina, Karim Shana. Kedev Sheikriv B'Yisrael Lefanecha, like the Jewish people have offered before you. Shesar means Klum Ekriv Shtei Torin. Have they ever brought two turtle doves? Shesar is Shtei Torin. Admasa Klum Bono Lefanecha Mizbeach Adama. Admasa represents did the Goyim ever build for you a Mizbeach of the earth, like the Jewish people did? Tarshish means Klum Shimshul Lefanecha B'Vigdei Kohuna. Did the Goyim ever serve before you in the B'Vigdei Kohuna? And how does Tarshish mean the B'Vigdei Kohuna? Dichtibu Tarshish V'Shayam V'Yashvei. Tarshish is one of the stones that was on the Choshen. Meshach Chochma, by the way, says an interesting thing. Why out of the 12 stones of the Choshen, why are we singling out Tarshish? He says because Tarshish was the stone of Shevet Asher. We find, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, in the Barachas of Asher, that Shevet Asher had beautiful daughters who would marry Kohenim G'dolim. So therefore, the Malachim are pointing out to the Eibush, look at the contrast between the sneistic Jewish women who are suitable to marry Kohen and Golem versus the pritzistic Goyish women, like we said before. Meres represents Kul Mirsu Badam Lefanecha. Did the Goyim ever stir the blood in front of you? Like sometimes you have, when a Kohen is brought, sometimes you have to stir the blood. We learned in Yuma, for example, that the blood has to be stirred to prevent it from getting hard before it gets sprinkled on the Mizbeach. Marsina represents Kul Mirsu Menachas Lefanecha. Did they mix the Menachas in front of you? Marsina is also Maris, which means mix, and Na means raw, because a Kohen Mincha is brought of raw flour. and mochan klum echinu shulchan lepanachad, but they ever prepare a table before you, the shulchan of lachan lepanim. So in other words, the malachim are arguing to the Ebeshah, look at all these chosim of the Jewish people, you got to help them. Of course, but the Ebeshah still appreciates when malachim and people remind him of the Ebeshah's chosim. So therefore, that's where the pasuk belongs over here. Yeah, true, yeah. And there is also Marsha and Alshich have a long discussion why the Malachim focus Dafka on these things and why in this order. One of them is the Alshich explains that the Jews by this party had committed a number of different Averis in the course of being by this party. So the Malachim are arguing to the Eberster, okay, they did these Averis, but counteracting these seven Averis they did, look at the seven great things that the Jewish people have been doing historically with the Korbanos, and that it should be a Kapara for those. And he explains how each one corresponds to one of the things. Yeah, that was part of the thing also, right, because we said that Vashti was Belshazzar's daughter. When we said before that the Goyim, the Kusim, whatever, harassed the Jewish people and mastered on them and got the Beis Hamikdash building stopped, Vashti was involved in that. And Vashti was very happy that the Beis Hamikdash, I think the Medrash actually says whatever, she said to Achashverosh, you know, my grandfather destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, how are you talking, you should even think of rebuilding it? So yeah, the Malachim are telling the Ebeshah, get rid of Vashti, you know, let's get the show on the road again with the Korbanos. Yeah. Next, Vayomer Memuchan, so Memuchan spoke up. Now Memuchan is the last one on the list. Karshan Hashetzad Mosad Marsan, Memuchan is the seventh one. Tana, we learn in the Brayse, Memuchan, the Haman. This is actually Haman. V'lama nekashmei Memuchan, Shemuchan the Poronis, because he's ready for punishment. Rashi says it means because he was going to end up getting hanged, like he was destined for that all along, to get hanged. Marshal says differently. It means he's always ready to cause trouble for other people, like now for Rashi. Tosfos brings actually a medrash that on the contrary, Memuchan is none other than Daniel. Daniel had been forced to marry a noble woman, and she lorded it over him. I'm a noble woman, you're a commoner. So therefore, now he's advising Achashverosh, get rid of this women's lib over here, execute Vashti, declare that all the husbands are in charge of their wives, and he means that way it'll improve his own home situation as well. Daniel. Tosfos quotes it from a medrash. From here we see that the simple person is the one who jumps ahead. Meaning he's the seventh one, he should have spoken up last. And here he's jumping forward with his advice ahead of everybody else because he's a hediot. He's a simple person. He's referring to Haman. If we're saying that Memuchan, the Haman, then he's a hediot, yeah. Next, what did Achashverosh send out his letters? Lias Kalish Sarabavesa, that every person should be a master in his house. Amar Rava, Il Mola Igris, why, what's the point of the Megillah having to mention that? Amar Rava, Il Mola Igris Rishonis, if it were not for these first letters, Lo Nishtayim, Mitzanein, Shari Yisrael, Sarah Dupalit, there would not have been left from the enemies of the Jewish people, again, I mean the Jewish people themselves, a single remnant. Amri, because people said, My Haida Shadulon Lias Kalish Sarabavesa, what does Achashverosh have to be telling us a chiddush? Everybody should be a master in their own house? Pshita, it's obvious. I feel a korcha, even a weaver, like a really low down person in his own house. Pardashka Lahabe should be a nobleman. In other words, of course, the man is the man of the house. What's Achashverosh telling us? The point is, in other words, if it weren't for that, what happens? Haman sends out his letters saying, in 11 months' time, you're going to be wiping out the Jews. They're going to wait 11 months. They're not going to start right away. But they realized already, we know already Achashverosh is given to sending out ridiculous decrees like this one. We better wait until we actually see which way the wind is blowing. These egos that are shown us are the one. These Kaddish Sarabavesis, if it weren't for those, the Amtoyas are the ones to kill the Jews, yeah. So if it weren't for the Rishonis, if it weren't for these ones that are described at the end of the first parak of the Megillah, then when it came to the second set, the ones that Haman sent out, everybody would have right away started pogroms. But like this, they realized, Achashverosh is a silly king, he's sending out these ridiculous things, you never know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, we better hold off. Next, the Achashverosh is upset, Vashti's been killed, so his advisors tell him, V'yafkid ha-melech p'kidim, the king should set up appointees all over the kingdom to gather together all the girls. Omer Rav, my dechtiv, kol orum yasa b'das, what does it mean? There's a pasuk in Mishlei that says that any crafty person, any smart person, acts with das, uksil, but the fool, yifreis ivelis, spreads out the foolishness for everybody to see. Now, we have two kings that are described in Tanakh who wanted women, who needed to find a woman. We have David HaMelech at the beginning of Sefer Melachim and said he was cold, nothing could warm him up, so they tell him that we should find a Nar of Sula and she'll warm you up. And they have a Cheshbet. They ended up with Avishag, yeah. And then there's a Achashverosh. So the Gemara is contrasting them. Kol Orim Yasa B'Das the David. When it says that the smart person acts with intelligence, that's David. Dichtiv Vayomru LaYavadav Yivakshu LaAdoni HaMelech Nar Abesula. They should look for the king for one Nar Abesula. So everybody knows Achilah is only looking for one. Kol Manda Avalei Brata Aisin Yalei. So anybody who has a daughter brings him. She might end up being the one to get to serve the king. On the other hand, when it says that the fool spreads out his foolishness, this is Achashverosh, it says the king should appoint officers all over the kingdom, and you want to gather every Nar of Sula. Everybody knows, ultimately the king's only going to end up picking one. And what's he going to do? He's going to end up sleeping with all the other ones meanwhile, so we're going to all our daughters are going to be defiled by him, and only one is going to win the prize. So come on, Abelie Brata, you tamar me now, so anybody who had a daughter hit her from the officials. Tomorrow, Beth Hashem.